Canto 7, Chapter 15. Narada's instructions on vegetarian sharing, irreligion, healing, yoga, and Advaita. Sri Narada said, "Some of the twice-born souls are devoted to fruitful labor. Some are engaged in austerities, O ruler of men. Some excel in Vedic study, while others exercise rhetoric, and some also unite their consciousness in spiritual knowledge, in bhakti and jnana yoga. A person desiring liberation should donate the result of his sacrifices to someone devoted to spiritual knowledge, usually a Brahmin or a jnani. If it happens that such a person cannot be found, one should donate to others according to their merit. Offering to the demigods, one should feed two of them, and offering to the forefathers, three of them should be fed, or else, in any case, at least one should be nourished. One must not involve a great number of them, despite having the means for it. In exceeding this number of invitees or relatives with the Shraddha ceremony, things will not work out perfectly, as for the most suitable time and place, the paraphernalia, the person to receive the honor, and the method applied. When the sacred food that was obtained by offering it at the proper time and place with love and devotion to the deity of the Lord is given to the person who deserves the honor, such a practice will be a source of everlasting welfare. In offering sanctified food to the godly souls, the saints, the forefathers, the living beings in general, one's friends and one's family members, one should consider them all as being part of the original personality of God. Someone who knows the dharmic principles should never offer meat, fish, or eggs during the ceremonies of belief, nor should he, in his normal life, be a meat eater. One derives the greatest satisfaction from the vegetarian food of the sages, and not so much from the food obtained by needless violence against animals. For persons desiring true righteousness, there is no religion higher than this. To forsake, in one's mind, words and actions, all violence against other living beings." Persons who, by fixing themselves on the true self in Samyama, are free from material desires, know very well the purpose of the sacrifices. Enlightened by spiritual knowledge, these transcendentalists know that some sacrifices, animal sacrifices, have karmic consequences. Living beings, seeing a sacrificer, become afraid when a creature is to be sacrificed. They think, "This ignorant, unfriendly person most certainly will very soon kill us." He who knows what dharma means is therefore supposed to perform, day after day, with satisfaction, his regular and occasional duties with the food that is given by God, the vegetarian food of the sages. A knower of dharma speaks of five branches of a-dharma that, as kinds of unrighteousness, must be given up: vidharma, paradharma, upadharma, abhasa, and chaladharma. Vidharma should be understood as that what constitutes an objection or a detriment to dharma, to righteousness, naturalness, or religiousness, the original purpose of one's duty. Paradharma is the encouragement to engage in duties strange to one's own. Upadharma is the way of a pretender of dutifulness, a hypocrite, and chala refers to feigning the duty with word jugglery. Abhasa is that what persons self-willed obstinately do in defiance of their spiritual department, their ashrama, their civil status. Why would acting in line with the regulations for one's natural duty not bring peace? Performing one's religious duties, one should not endeavor for one's livelihood, that is to say, expect no income from religious activities. Nor should one, being poor, strive for possessions. The desirelessness of someone free from such endeavoring is like that of the python that lives effortlessly. Where would he, who, driven by lust and greed, runs from pillar to post for the sake of riches, find the happiness typical of the contented person who, not endeavoring for his maintenance, is happy from within? For an ever-contented mind, every path followed is equally auspicious, just like it is with a person who, with shoes on his feet, has nothing to fear from pebbles and thorns. O King, why would an innerly contented person not live happily on just a little bit of water when he, because of the ado with his genitals and tongue, becomes a man who is not better than a household dog? An educated but discontented man will, because of his restlessness, see how the strength of his senses, his education, austerity, fame and spiritual insight will gradually dwindle and vanish. With someone hungry and thirsty, desires will find their end upon eating. One is relieved of anger by approaching matters differently, but a person will not get over his greed when he delights in conquering all the directions of the globe. O King, many scholars with a lot of knowledge, many counselors and many political leaders landed in hell simply because of lacking in spiritual contentment. Lusts are defeated by determination. Anger is overcome by forsaking the object of one's desire. For greed to disappear, one must consider the fact that possessions make one possessed. And fear is overcome by contemplating the true self in meditation. Deliberation on spiritual matters is the cure for lamentation and illusion. False pride is cured by service to a great soul. Silence defeats the obstacles on the path of yoga, and violence, evil hostility, is overcome by giving up on passions. With compassion, pity, and concern for others, one can alleviate distress as caused by other living entities or by nature, and by systematic meditation in yoga, one can end one's own karmic suffering. Sleep one can conquer by exercising one's vital breath. By serving the spiritual master with devotion, one can easily, in the mode of goodness, conquer all these symptoms of passion and ignorance, as also those of goodness itself. The Guru, who is the light on the path, must be considered the Supreme Lord in person, and he who considers him and what he heard from him as being mortal and time-bound is like an elephant that has bathed and thereafter takes a dust bath. He, the teacher, is by the common man taken for a normal human being, while he is the Supreme Lord in person, the ruler over the original cause of matter, Pradhana, the non-manifest matter, who is the original person as also the Lord of Yoga, whose feet are sought by the masters of yoga. One has wasted one's time when all the prescribed activities and observances designed for the definite subjugation of the six departments of the five senses and the mind, have not led to the ultimate goal, the connectedness in yoga of one's individual consciousness with him. Just as occupational duties performed with the interest of acquiring an income do not serve the interest of yoga, also traditional public works of piety that are performed by a materialistic person do not contribute to the necessary unification of consciousness. He who wants to conquer his mind must alone, in a solitary place, not depending on a company of attached people like a family, as a renounced person live on charity and eat little. In a clean, leveled place, O King, he must arrange for a seat and steadily, comfortably, and equanimously sit down, keep his body straight, and thus practice the pranava. He should arrest the in and outgoing air by stopping his inhaling and exhaling, and that very moment give up all desires that occupy his mind. while staring at the tip of his nose, he must turn the mind that wanders here and there away from whatever. A learned yogi should, from the core of his heart, step by step, put an end to the mind that was disturbed by lust. Someone who manages to maintain this practice will, with his mind like a fire that extinguishes without fuel, soon succeed in attaining the pure state, nirvana. Not distracted by the various desires, the mind becomes calm and peaceful in all its movements. One is thus of a consciousness that is touched by the happiness of the transcendental platform, a position from which one factually can never separate oneself. When someone first leaves behind his home to wander around as a sannyasi, and then again returns to live from the field of the threefold practice of materially oriented, economic, religious, and sense-oriented activities, such a shameless mendicant may be compared to someone who eats his own vomit, a vantasi. Those who first consider their body as something separate from the soul, as something mortal meant for stool, worms, and ashes, and then again glorify that body and identify themselves with it, are useless fools. For householders to forsake their duties, for celibates to give up on vows, for withdrawn persons to submit themselves as a servant of the common man, and for renunciates to hanker after the senses, is for all the ashramas a most abominable form of behavior by which one cheats the spiritual ardor. One should be indifferent about those who are thus bewildered by the external energy of the Lord. They are pitiful. Once one has understood what the soul and the supersoul entails, once one from the beyond has cleansed one's consciousness with spiritual knowledge, what is there left to hanker for? Why would one still be a slave of the body that one maintains? One says that the body is the chariot, the senses are the horses, that the mind, the master of the senses, is there as the reins, that the sense objects constitute the path followed, that intelligence, reason, is the charioteer, and that consciousness, goodness, character, is the great bond created by the Lord. The spokes of the wheel are the 10 airs in the body. The inside and outside of the wheels are religion and irreligion. The one being driven is the individual self that is falsely identified. The pranava is the bow, and the individual soul is the arrow, but final beatitude is the target. Attachment and aversion, greed and lamentation, illusion, fear, madness, false prestige, insult, fault-finding and deception, violence and jealousy, unrest, bewilderment, hunger and sleep, are one's enemies. These and others are the consequence of passion and ignorance, but sometimes they sprout from being attached to the mode of goodness. As long as one has this human form, which, as a chariot with all its subordinate parts, depends on one's control, one must, being of service at the lotus feet of the most venerable souls, hold on to the, by the strength of the infallible one, sharpened sword of knowledge until the enemy is defeated. When one thus found satisfaction in one's transcendental bliss, this body can be given up. Not doing so, being inattentive and motivated for what is untrue, the senses that act as the horses will lead the charioteer on the road of desire. There the driver falls into the hands of rogues, the sense objects, because of whom he, together with the horses and the rest, will land in the dark, blind well of material existence and suffer the great fear of death. To be inclined towards or to cease from material engagement, pravriti and nivriti, are the two types of activities mentioned in the Vedas. Being materially inclined, one keeps returning to a worldly existence, but ceasing, one enjoys the nectar of eternity. systematically being of violence with the sacrificing of animals, with all kinds of fire sacrifices that require so many things, are actions filled with desire and cause anxiety. To be directed towards Darsha, Purnamasa, Chaturmasya, Pashu, Soma and other ritualistic ceremonies is called Pravriti. Even so, the fire sacrifices and the distribution of the offerings, Huta Prahuta, as also the, for the sake of the public, constructing of temples, resting houses and gardens and the digging of wells and distribution of food and water, are to be recognized as forms of Pravritri engagement. The five substances of the sacrifice result in the smoke that is associated with the divinity of the night, the dark half of the month, the sun going through the south, and the new moon. By that divinity, one finds the food grains that are the seeds of the vegetation on the earth's surface, O ruler of the earth. This called into existence by the Father of Time, they, by feeding us through the sacrifices, lead to one after the other birth, to the time and again regular assuming of a physical form to be present in this world. But a twice-born soul, a Brahmin, who from his conception till his funeral is purified by means of different rites, offers, by the light of spiritual knowledge, his engagement in sacrifices into the fire of his sensual apparatus, and is thus of Nivriti actions. Merging the senses with the mind, which is infected by words that move in waves of material predilection, he restricts the words to the collection of their constituent elements, the letters. Those elements are then restricted to the aum of the pranava, which is restricted to a point, the bindu, a point between the eyes. This he withdraws in his sound reflection, the nadi he sacrifices into his life air prana, that he merges with the complete of the Lord in Brahman. In Nivriti, progressing with the fire, the sun, the day, the end of the day, the bright half of the month, the full moon, the passage of the sun through the north, and the independent ruler Brahma, he who is of discernment and who moves from the gross realm to the subtle destination, arrives in a fixed sequence at the transcendental state of intelligence, the soul, Turiya, the original state of consciousness. Repeatedly, being born again in following what one calls the path of God, this Nivriti process, he who endeavors for self-realization and desires the peace of the soul will not return once he has found his position in the true self. He who on this, in the Vedas recommended path of the ancestors and the gods, keeps his eyes focused on the scriptures, is versed and will not get bewildered despite being a material person. Being there both inside and outside, for all living beings, from the beginning till the end, this Lord, transcendental to the gross of matter, is personally present in this world as the knowledge and the known, as the expression and the expressed, and as the darkness and the light. Despite being rejected as a real form, a mere reflection of a form in the mirror is nevertheless accepted as being real. The same way, one accepts the reality of what the senses are telling as real, even though that is difficult to prove from speculations. One is neither the reflected image of the objects of this world, which consists of the earth element and such, nor is one a combination or transformation of these elements. Even though one has no existence separate from them, to consider oneself and the soul a part of them is also a false notion. The body, consisting of the five elements, cannot exist without the sense objects belonging to it. The untrue is found in the total form of that body, which, just like that what belongs to it, in the end turns out to be a temporary appearance. It compares to the same confusion and, likewise breaking away from the regulative principles, as one has in a dream. As long as one in one's sleep is separated by that dream from the objects of the waking state, one is led astray by that part of one's existence. A wise soul rejects from his self-realization and from his chosen unity of life conception, actions and matter in this world, the three forms of ignorance associated with them as being three forms of sleep. One speaks of oneness of life conception, called Bhava Advaita, when one considers the transcendental cause and material effect as being one, as being part of one and the same reality, like seeing the cloth by its threads, its warp and woof. To consider them separately is what makes them unreal. One speaks of oneness in actions, called Kriya Advaita, when one in all the activities of one's mind, words and body directly is devoted to the transcendence of the Absolute Spirit, Brahman, O Yudhishthira. One speaks of oneness of material interest, Dravya Advaita, when that what one aspires for oneself is one and the same as what one wishes for one's wife and children, other people, or whatever living beings. This is also called enlightened self-interest or the Golden Rule. O King, a person should perform his duties according to his Varnashrama position in society, engaging with the means, the place and the time that are not scripturally forbidden, and he should not follow any other course of action unless there is an emergency. Any human being who, with respect for these and other principles described in the Vedic literatures, is of devotional service and thereto abides by his occupational duties, can even at home reach his heavenly kingdom, O King. It is the way all of you Pandavas, O Lord of Kings, escaped from all that insurmountable danger. By serving the feet of your master, Krishna, you managed to perform the rituals successfully and have conquered the elephants of all directions, the burden of unrighteous kings. I myself, a long, long time ago, in a former Mahakalpa, in another epoch of Brahma, existed as a denizen of heaven named Upabarhana, and was most respected among the Gandharvas. I had a beautiful body, and was most attractive, smelled nicely, was decorated and captivating to behold. Always attracted to women, I was, in the excitement of my desires, a devotee though. Once, there was a gathering of the gods and, to the occasion of glorifying the Lord in song and dance, all the Gandharvas and Apsaras were invited by the rulers of the universe, the Prajapatis. I also, as an expert in singing the glories of the divine life, went there surrounded by women. But, learning about my attitude, the divine rulers of the universe cursed me with great force for my dalliance. May you, acting contrary to the code of conduct, as from now become a Shudra bereft of the beauty. Thereupon, having taken birth from a maid servant, I nevertheless obtained a life as a son of a Brahma, because I, at the time, could render service to spiritual propounders, Vaishnavas. I have explained to you the dharma by which an attached householder can conquer sin and quickly attain the position of the renounced order. You, Pandavas, are as lucky to have in this world all the saints visiting your place because in your home, most confidentially, the Supreme Brahman in person can be found in the form of a normal human being, Krishna. He is the one Brahman sought by the great souls in order to realize their liberation and bliss in heaven. He, your renowned cousin, Lord Krishna, is the beloved well-wisher, the most worshipable person, the heart and soul, and the original guru of instruction of all of you on the regulative principles, the Vidhi. His form, beyond the purview of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and the others, can factually be understood by meditation, by silence, by bhakti and by putting an end to all material association. May the one Lord, this same personality, this guru of instruction and object of devotion of the devotees, be pleased with us. Sri Shuka said, King Yudhishthira, the best of the Bharata dynasty, delighted to hear the descriptions of the Devarishi, was caught in the ecstasy of love and worshipped both him and Lord Krishna. After the reverence he received from Lord Krishna and from Yudhishthira, who as the son of Pritha was utterly amazed about the fact that Krishna was the Parabrahman, the supreme of the spirit, the Muni bade them farewell and left. Thus I gave a description of the different dynasties of the daughters of Daksha, in which all the worlds and their moving and non-moving living beings, consisting of gods, demons, human beings, and so on, came about. Thus, the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam ends, named The Science of God.